The Roman Catholic Diocese of Helena files for bankruptcy protection as part of a settlement with sexual abuse victims. Good evening, I'm Connor Ballantyne.
And I'm Madeline Beck. And Capitol reporter Dan Boyce has our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
We'll also have an update on the city of Missoula's effort to own its water system. And in our feature interview, reporter Edward O'Brien talks with the head of Northwestern Energy about the company's desire to own the dams that produce much of Montana's power. The Roman Catholic Diocese of Helena is filing for bankruptcy protection as part of a settlement in lawsuits over child sex abuse. Capitol reporter Dan Boyce tells us it's the 11th diocese in the nation to seek bankruptcy after similar claims.
Allegations against the Roman Catholic Diocese of Helena stem from a period between the late 1930s and the 1970s. Hundreds of victims say clergy members sexually abused them at that time while the church covered it up. Most of the clergy implicated in the suit have since died. None remain in active ministry. The $15 million settlement will be paid mostly by the church's insurance. Diocese spokesman Dan Bartleson says the bankruptcy is necessary for the church to survive moving forward while still attempting to make amends for what happened in the past.
We're in a situation where we are cutting back personnel. We're stopping building projects. We're cutting back programs.
Bartleson says the bankruptcy settlement was negotiated with the plaintiff's attorneys. He says it is not an attempt to shirk responsibility for the abuse.
I don't think this issue is going to close anytime soon for any diocese that has this issue. What we're just hoping is that we can continue to do a good job handling this issue in a pastoral way and continue to also go forward and exist as a church for the faithful.
A $2.5 million fund will be set aside for additional victims who may come forward later. Attorney Vito De La Cruz represents one group of victims in the lawsuits. He says plaintiffs will now vote on whether to accept the settlement. That vote should come in by this summer at the latest.
I don't think anybody can ever put a value on being repeatedly raped and sexually abused as a child.
But he says this is probably the best deal the victims could get with the church. There is a non-monetary side to the settlement as well. The diocese has to publicly apologize to each of the victims and set up a hotline for people to report instances of sexual abuse. The settlement does not include the Ursuline Academy in St. Ignatius. It's alleged a group of nuns there abused dozens of Native American children. De La Cruz says the Ursulines have not yet agreed to settle. At this point, that part of the suit is still moving forward to trial. I'm Dan Boyce reporting at the Capitol.
And in other news from around the state, a private equity firm that owns Missoula's water system has rejected the city's $50 million offer to buy the assets of Montana Water Company. The Missoulian reports the Carlisle Group dismissed the offer today, saying it was significantly below a previous offer that the group also rejected. Mayor John Ingen has said if the offer was rejected, the city would begin condemnation proceedings. Under that action, the city argues the district court that it should be allowed to take the private property for public use and the judge would determine a fair price. Ingen said the Carlisle Group has suggested a $120 million price. Missoula is the only major city in Montana that does not own its water system.
Ravalli County's commissioners continue their efforts to get the county's accounting mess cleared up. Commissioners approved spending up to $10,000 yesterday to hire retired Beaverhead County Treasurer Kathy Allard as a temporary treasurer to get the county's books up to date. They also authorized a $4 million tax payment to the state to avoid a $37,000 penalty. The state estimated the county owes nearly $4.5 million, and the rest will be paid when the county's books are reconciled. Treasurer Valerie Stamey was put on paid leave on January 23rd after falling months behind in depositing money and providing disbursements and financial reports. She has claimed the county's books were a mess when she was appointed in September and alleges previous treasurers allowed tax liens to be sold illegally.
Max Baucus has launched what could be his last lap around Montana as U.S. Senator with a vote pending on his nomination to become the next ambassador to China. The 72-year-old Democrat kicked off a three-day tour of the state today at a rally in Billings. Additional stops were scheduled in Tudot, Butte, Great Falls, Missoula, and Libby. Baucus plans to top it off Sunday with an invitation-only event in his hometown of Helena. He already had announced his plans to retire this year after six terms when President Barack Obama nominated him for the ambassadorship. If the Senate confirms the China posting, Governor Steve Bullock will name an interim successor until voters weigh in during the November election.
The proposed Keystone XL oil pipeline from Canada has cleared a significant hurdle after the State Department raised no major environmental objections to its construction. The department's report was released today. It says Canadian tar sands are likely to be developed regardless of U.S. action on the pipeline, and other options to get the oil from Western Canada to Texas Gulf Coast refineries are worse for the environment. The latest environmental review stops short of recommending approval of the project, but the report gives the Obama administration political cover if it chooses to endorse the pipeline in spite of opposition from many Democrats and environmental groups. State Department approval of the project is needed because it crosses a U.S. border. A decision is not expected before the summer.
Air Force officials say a culture of fear that made launch officers believe they had to get perfect test scores to be promoted fueled a widening cheating scandal within a military's nuclear missile core. Half of the 183 launch officers at Malmstrom Air Force Base in Montana have been implicated and suspended. Air Force Secretary Deborah Lee James says the scandal hasn't affected the safety or reliability of the military's nuclear mission. Speaking to Pentagon reporters yesterday, Air Force officials said that it appears the cheating was confined to the Montana base, though a climate of frustration, low morale, and other failures permeates the nuclear force. The cheating scandal is the latest in an array of troubles that now have the attention of senior defense officials.
Monsanto is offering assurances that the wheat breeding research center it plans to open in Great Falls will involve conventional research and not genetically modified organisms. Jeff Caselny is Monsanto's U.S. commercial lead for wheat. He tells the Great Falls Tribune that the work that will occur in the Great Falls area involves traditional wheat breeding to come up with better varieties that produce better yield and products. Caselny says the seed varieties will be developed at the company's Wheat Technology Center in Twin Falls, Idaho, by crossbreeding different types of seeds. The resulting seeds will be grown in test plots north of Great Falls to study how well the varieties grow in various soils and environments to see if they are commercially viable.
A truck driver has denied charges filed after an Alaska man was struck and killed while walking along Interstate 90 in south central Montana. Officials in the Sweetgrass County Attorney's Office say 45-year-old David Welk pleaded not guilty today to failing to stop at a scene of an accident that he knew or reasonably should have known involved someone who suffered an injury. He denied an alternative charge for failing to stop at an accident involving a deceased person. Prosecutors believe Welk was driving a semi-trailer near Big Timber early September 30th when the truck hit an 81-year-old LG Bedford of Wasilla, Alaska. Welk became a suspect after his driving partner called the Montana Highway Patrol on October 25th. Welk was arrested in Iowa on January 23rd. He remains jailed on a $250,000 bail.
A 17-year-old Helena girl faces charges for a crash in which she told investigators she blacked out after huffing canned air, ran a red light, and slammed into another vehicle, leaving its 88-year-old driver hospitalized a month later. The Independent Record reports Deanna Marie Evans is charged with felony criminal endangerment for the December 30th crash that also sent her passenger to the hospital. She has not yet appeared in court. Charging documents say Evans told investigators the reason she couldn't remember anything from the crash was that she and her passenger, quote, had each taken three hits from the can and blacked out, end quote. Court records say officers found a can of compressed air, a small amount of marijuana, and drug paraphernalia in Evans' car.
A New York City auction house says paintings by Claude Monet and Pierre-Auguste Renoir are among 400 items that will be sold from a reclusive copper heiress's private trove this spring. The Huguette Clark Collection sale at Christie's comes after a feud over her estate was settled in the fall. Some of the pieces were acquired by her father, a Montana copper king and senator who founded Las Vegas. Monet's Water Lilies is estimated to bring $25 to $35 million. Another masterpiece in the sale is Renoir's Young Women Playing Badminton. It has a presale estimate of $10 million to $15 million. Both will be offered May 6th. Other items from the collection go on sale June 18th. They include a Stradivari violin, gilded age furniture, and rare books.
NCAA President Mark Emmert is scheduled to speak at the Montana State Football Banquet as part of the team's annual spring scrimmage in Great Falls. Emmert served as vice president for academic affairs at Montana State from 1992 through 1995 before becoming provost and chancellor at the University of Connecticut and president at LSU and Washington. He became the NCAA's fifth president in 2010. MSU officials say Emmert is scheduled to discuss college athletics during the April 11th banquet at Four Seasons Arena in Great Falls. The Triangle Classic scrimmage is set for April 12th at Great Falls Memorial Stadium.
Northwestern Energy announced last fall that it wants to purchase 11 hydroelectric dams from PPL Montana. It's now in the process of proving to regulators that the $900 million deal's in the best interest of consumers. Northwestern is the state's largest electricity provider. CEO Bob Rowe was in Missoula today and stopped by Montana Public Radio studio to talk with Edward O'Brien about the deal and why the company thinks its customers will benefit from it in the long term.
After deregulation, of course, all of the generators in Montana were sold, and Montana customers were exposed ultimately to the Western power market. That wasn't a place we wanted to be. Since I've been with the company in 2008, we've been focusing on investing in every aspect of the utility operation, and that includes our transmission and distribution systems. It also includes electric and natural gas supply. So we've actually been very successful on both fronts. The dams really were the crown jewels of what had been the Montana Power system. Extraordinary facilities located all across our Montana service territory with existing transmission adjacent to them. So as we continued to rebuild the utility, the opportunity, if it ever came available, to acquire that specific set of resources was something that was very important to us. We communicated to PPL our interest a number of times, and as we've described in the filing to the commission, those discussions would stop and start, but ultimately we were able to reach an agreement that we thought made sense for both parties.
Stop and start basically where? Colstrip? Was that the real hanging point, the Colstrip facility?
No. PPL is a very large, very successful company that has lots of operations. They had to think through what their future plans were. They are a utility in the east, in the southeast, and actually in the United Kingdom. And the generators in Montana were their primary non-utility assets in the western United States. But ultimately, through a very extended process, we were able to reach terms that made sense. We did economic analysis. We compared to other resource alternatives. We also did a tremendous amount of due diligence about the health, really, of those facilities, just to confirm that, in fact, they would be assets that potentially could be 100-year assets if adequately maintained.
On average, how old are these facilities?
They go back to early in the 20th century and were very well maintained by Montana Power. PPL, actually, our conclusion was in some cases we will be acquiring them back in better shape than they were purchased. PPL has invested well over $300 million in the assets over the years that they've owned them.
What's the average lifespan of a dam, or do you even know?
Well, there oughtn't be any terminal age. I really believe that as long as we do a good job investing back in these facilities, they can continue to serve for as long as the rivers run. But there are capital requirements to continue to work and maintain the facilities.
I read a really interesting article in the New York Times, I think it was, I don't know, earlier this week or last week, about how climate change, and forget the political argument over that, how it's affecting big companies like Coca-Cola and Nike, how Coca-Cola, like in India, it's affecting literally their water supplies, sugar beets, their cane, Nike, cotton crops. Could climate change potentially affect our water supplies and eventually affect the power that comes from these rivers?
That is vastly beyond my competence. What I would say is that another attractive thing about this set of assets is its diversity across our system. So each of the assets is already connected to our system, is in a different physical location, in a different watershed. So there's a lot of diversity that you wouldn't have with other large hydro institutions. And over time, it has very, very high availability, well into the 60%. And again, a thermal plant would be 90% or so. Wind generation would be much lower. So in terms of the availability, I think it really is, I guess to your question, as long as there is water in those rivers and as long as we do our job of maintaining those facilities, they ought to be providing power. If you look at the larger Western power market, and to the degree that we don't own resources where customers are paying the price based on the cost of production, then we're in the market buying power, and that market price is driven, as we saw during the California meltdown a number of years ago, that market price is driven by factors much larger and far outside Montana. And among the factors in the Western power market, shutdown of the San Onofre nuclear plant in California, shutdown of the Boardman coal plant in Oregon, further pressures on shutting down older plants, challenges of building newer plants. So there's an awful lot of pressure on that Western power market, and the ability to take these assets, dedicate them to serve our customers, and take out the risk of factors far outside Montana that we can't control.
Okay, so Northwestern is asking the Montana Public Service Commission to essentially pre-approve this deal, right?
Well, we filed an application on December 20th asking the commission to approve this transaction. PPL takes the risk that if the commission doesn't grant an approval, the deal doesn't go forward. The commission has an important responsibility in evaluating this application. What we filed included, I think, roughly 5,500 pages between testimony, exhibits, work papers. We're now in what's called the discovery phase. We've received actually hundreds of specific written questions. We've already filed several thousand pages of information in response to those questions. This process will go on for the next several months. Ultimately, there will be a hearing. It's currently scheduled for July, and a decision by the commission, we hope, by September. Importantly, another potential acquirer of these facilities would have to receive an approval from the Montana Commission. And from the seller's perspective, and PPL is not a regulated utility in Montana, they don't have to sell the facilities. They certainly don't have to sell the facilities to us. But any other potential buyer wouldn't have gone through that process. So PPL, as the seller, would have had more certainty about whether the sale was going to go forward or not.
Mm-hmm. And now, PSC consultant earlier this week said Northwestern's application is inadequate because it doesn't have enough information on how power from the dams is cheaper than other alternatives, in a nutshell, to which you say...
The consultant did its job in identifying areas that the commission might want to focus on, and we respect that. We met with the commission staff to talk specifically about some of the questions raised by the consultant. Among the suggestions the consultant had was that we ought to evaluate alternatives, including supercritical coal or woody biomass. And I think the consultant may not have been aware that we've done some of that evaluation previously.
For example, what's supercritical coal?
Supercritical would be high intensity, ultimately much cleaner coal. There are challenges in that, particularly the economic challenge of making that viable. Woody biomass is something that we actually had looked at as possibly a strategy to help deal with some of the challenges in the forest. Ultimately, we decided that did not make sense on scale for our customers because of uncertainty around the fuel supply and the price compared to other resources. But I think we did a good job responding to those questions raised by the consultant, and hopefully we'll be able to move forward. From a customer perspective, and I want to be very clear about what the customer bill effect will be of this transaction. I think that's something people need to know and think about. Mm-hmm. Since I joined Northwestern in 2008, our net plant in service dedicated to our Montana customers has increased an average of about 15% a year. And that's important if you're a Northwestern Energy gas or electric customer in Montana to know that we are focused on maintaining those fundamental systems that we all depend on. And that's a significant amount of investment. Over that same period, 2008 to 2012, the average residential electric bill in Montana has increased about 1% a year. The average natural gas bill has actually decreased during that period, an average of about 11% a year. The effect of this acquisition on this average customer, a typical customer bill, would be about a 4.2% increase in the total bill after the acquisition compared to where their bill is right now. And that would be a little bit over $3.50 a month. As customers, it makes sense to think about the comparison with renting versus owning your own home. If you're renting, you're not building up equity, but you may be paying less in that current market than when you switch to taking out a mortgage. But 20 years later, 30 years later, when that mortgage is paid, you obviously have tremendous equity and you're no longer making those payments. But even over time, as the rental market moves up and your mortgage payment stays where it was, well, this is very much the same proposition. The cost of power from this set of resources won't be charged based on the rental market. It will be charged based on the cost of a mortgage. And just as you have to put a new roof on the house, we'll be investing back in these facilities to ensure that they are high quality over a very long period of time.
You're asking customers to be patient and long-term thinking, and sometimes that's difficult to do when you see the bill, oh my God, $42 annually additional, yeah. Basically.
It is, and we lived through supply deregulation, and that was, to my mind, the most terrible example of the state of Montana, truly, thinking very short-term, making a decision that seemed to make sense short-term, and there were some of us who were looking long-term and saying, wait, this market is going to change, and it did, and we are all paying the price. So this is absolutely an opportunity for the state of Montana to think and act long-term. When the plants were sold, no one ever thought that we would be able to reacquire a piece of that, and particularly the hydro piece. So this is an opportunity, sadder but wiser, but it is an opportunity to either reverse what most people would say was the greatest public policy mistake in modern Montana history, or else potentially to repeat it.
Mm. If the deal does go through, what's the future of Kerr Dam? Have you and your team been in contact with the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes?
We will have power out of Kerr basically through 15. Each of the dams, as you know, is subject to license conditions. The license conditions for Kerr allows the Confederated Tribes to reacquire the dam in 2015, and this is a remarkable opportunity for them, basically at cost. And we expect that they will take over the dam. We know that they're taking their operational responsibilities very, very seriously. Certainly look forward to working with them.
Northwestern Energy CEO Bob Rowe, thank you so much for coming in and talking.
Now for this weekend's forecast. West of the Divide, there's a winter weather advisory in effect until 11 o'clock tonight for the Missoula Bitterroot Valleys, the Bitterroot and Sapphire Mountains, the Butte Blackfoot region, and the Potomac Sealy Lake region. Tonight, snow is likely with lows 7 to 14 degrees. Tomorrow calls for mostly cloudy skies with a slight chance of snow flurries, and a high should be 18 to 25 degrees. On Sunday, look for mostly cloudy skies with a chance of snow and highs in the mid-20s to lower 30s. In central Montana, there's a winter weather advisory in effect until 5 a.m. tomorrow for central and southern Lewis and Clark County. Tonight should be mostly cloudy with patchy freezing fog through the night. Snow is likely for the southern portion of central Montana. There's a chance of snow elsewhere. Expect lows 5 below to 5 above zero. Wind gusts could be up to 40 miles per hour. Tomorrow calls for mostly cloudy skies in the morning, becoming partly cloudy with some patchy freezing fog in the morning. There's a chance of snow in the mountains, and highs should be 15 to 20 degrees. On Sunday, it should be mostly cloudy with a chance of snow in the western mountains, and highs should be 15 to 25 degrees. And in southwest Montana, there's also a winter weather advisory in effect until 5 a.m. tomorrow for southwest Montana. Tonight, expect snow and lows 0 to 15 degrees above. Tomorrow should be mostly cloudy with a chance of snow through the day, and highs should be 15 to 20 degrees. And on Sunday, it should be mostly cloudy with a slight chance of snow with highs 15 to 25 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Christine Kaufman.
Montana has four athletes competing in the upcoming Olympics. They'll be racing through the snow, flying down the mountain, and turning flips in the air. I'll be cheering them on and hoping they have good health insurance. Imagine a health insurance system where every Montanan can get coverage so that when we do dangerous things like taking a few Olympic turns on the icy sidewalk before crashing to the ground, we can see a doctor. Imagine a system where no one is denied health insurance, even if the person has a serious pre-existing health condition like cancer or diabetes. Imagine if financial help was available to make insurance more affordable. Imagine if health plans covered the health care every one of us needs at some point in our lives, like doctor visits and hospital stays, preventive care, prescription drugs, and maternity care. Just imagine. Well, welcome to the future. That's exactly what we've got in the new health insurance marketplace. If you're thinking the health care reform has nothing to do with you because you already have insurance, please listen up. You may have coverage right now, and thanks to reform, you still will, even if you lose your job. And what about your family and friends and neighbors who haven't been able to get health insurance? They need reform right now. Beneath the deliberate misinformation campaigns about the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare or whatever you call it, there's a revolutionary thing happening. Montanans who've never had health insurance before are getting it, and at a price they can afford. I'm a navigator for the new marketplace. Last week, a healthy woman came to me angry that she had to purchase insurance. I tried to explain that insurance would keep her out of bankruptcy if the unexpected happened. We made it through the online system smoothly and found a plan for $28 a month with a $500 deductible. Her jaw dropped as she asked, "How is that possible?" A middle-aged couple who had not been able to afford insurance for many years qualified for a $1,000 per month discount. The wife has been unable to work due to a hip fracture, and the self-employed husband's earnings are low because he cares for his wife. They finally have insurance. They left with tears in their eyes. It's time for you to talk to your neighbors and family members and send them to healthcare.gov. If they need assistance, send them to your community health center. For decades, these clinics across the state have provided primary care to patients regardless of their income or health insurance status. The clinics now have application counselors ready to help Montanans through the process for free. It's not all good news, though. I had a call from a couple with four children who made about $30,000, just under the poverty line for a family of six. The father has a life-threatening illness requiring surgery, and the hospital will not accept him without insurance. As healthcare reform was designed, this family would have been covered by Medicaid, but Montana legislators refused to expand our state's Medicaid program. So now families like these, who ironically make too little to qualify for marketplace financial help, are shut out of healthcare. More than 40,000 Montanans fall in this gap. Healthcare reform is helping Montanans get the care they need. I hear daily about families so thankful to have insurance for the first time in their lives. Remember this when you hear disingenuous attack ads. But also remember the Montana families abandoned by the legislature. If you, like me, want a happy ending to this story for all Montanans, you might volunteer to gather signatures for a citizens' initiative to be placed on the November ballot. It will require the state to accept the federal dollars to expand Medicaid. The petitions should hit the streets in the next few weeks. So get informed, speak out, help create the happy ending. While Montana Olympians go for the gold, many other Montanans are thrilled with their silver or bronze health plans in the marketplace. I'm Christine Kaufman. I'm a marketplace navigator with the Montana Primary Care Association.
Christine Kaufman is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Madeline Beck.
And I'm Connor Ballantyne. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.